You're listening to the Fezcast, produced on behalf of the Saracen Supporters Association and featuring the independent thought.
This is your emergency broadcast system. This is your emergency broadcast system.
Morning, Grandad. A ticky ticky tonga, a ticky ticky tonga, a massa wire, a massa
wire.
Leo, leo, leo. Leo, leo, leo.
We apologize for that temporary loss of transmission. We can now return you to
the Fezcast. To the Fezcast.
Well, hello everybody and welcome to episode 30 of season 4 of the Fezcast. A bit of a hodgepodge of a show. Obviously, we're going to do a review of the fine win for Saracens over the Quins at the Showdown 4, where I'll be joined by Duncan to discuss all the talking points of that. But before that, Joe and I got together last week to preview the Women's Six Nations, which I'm going to play in for you now. And then following that, Joe and I are going to have a chat about our relative success in predictions and the games themselves. So plenty to look forward to. I hope you enjoy the show.
You're listening to the Fezcast. Hi,
Alex Osterbury here, Director of Rugby for Saracens Women. You're listening to the Saracens Fezcast.
This is the Fezcast.
Joe and I have recorded this last Wednesday, 3 days before the Women's Six Nations kicks off, and we're kind of doing a review preview. I've no idea what we're going to call it, Joe, but the Women's Six Nations has started last weekend, so we'll have a quick brief talk about the three games that will have been played this weekend and prove that I know as little about women's rugby as I do men's rugby when it comes to predicting international games. But Joe, I mean, you're obviously looking forward to the Women's Six Nations. I take it you're going to a fair few games.
Oh, well, I'm hoping to, but, well, work is work, so we will see how we get along. The good news is that the games are being broadcast on either BBC, BBC iPlayer, BBC Sport, across those kind of platforms as well. So all the games will be available for people to watch, so every cloud and such like. So some big games ahead, I think.
Well, indeed. I mean, let's perhaps talk about the teams first, shall we, Joe? Because I think it's important to have a look. And I mean, we discussed before we come out on here what way we're doing and everything. And I think we need to start with England's. Got 10 Saracens players in them. And congratulations to May being called up to cover for Ali Kokane as well. Ali gets well soon as well, gets better soon. But yeah, I mean, England are going into this as favourites, I would imagine. I mean, they've won the tournament the last few years, although, you know, for the last 5 years, indeed. New coach in John Mitchell, and I mean, I'll say something about that in a bit as well. But, OK, we got France away. France aren't a bad side. I suppose the question is, Joe, do you think that England can get any better than they've already been playing at over the last 5 years? And if they can't get too much better, and I think it is only very small increment or increases that perhaps they can make, how much closer are the likes of Wales, Scotland and France in particular going to be to them? And how close a tournament do you think it will be for England?
Yeah, well, I mean, to start off with England first, Jez, obviously Grand Slam winners last year, they're going for six in a row now, world number one. Lost the World Cup, as we know, to New Zealand, but then beat them in the WXV One League this year. So, you know, they're doing really well. We've got a couple of big returners. So Emily Scarrett returns for the first time in the England shirt, probably for the best part of a year, 18 months, I would guess. Really experienced pack. You know, we know that their driving maul is just awesome. They've got a load of speedsters, including some of our very own. And you mentioned there 10 Saris. You've got Poppy, Kelsey, Rosie, Sophie Bridger, Jess Breed, Sydney gets a return in England shirt, Zoe Harrison back after her injury, Ella is in there, and as you mentioned before, SSA sponsored, Mae Campbell being pulled in at the last minute to cover for Amy. And not least of all, Marley captain in the squad again, and we'll get her 100th cap if she runs out this weekend, so she may well have already got it by the time this broadcast goes out. But, you know, there's just so much skill across the team in the forwards and in the backs. I don't think there's really an area of weakness, if I'm being brutally honest. And I think they'll be very difficult to beat. You only have to look at the squad, most of them playing in the PWR at the top level, and have done for some time. The ability for John Mitchell, who I know we'll chat about in a minute, to move those players across several positions because of the diversity of the players playing across the back line, across the pack. It's just, I don't think it's going to be an easy tournament, and we'll cover the other teams in a second, but I find it very difficult to look past England for the championship again this year, if I'm honest.
Well, in which case then, that begs the question, you know, in the same way as I spoke about Ireland in the men's rugby, perhaps not achieving what they should have done in not winning a Grand Slam, is a championship enough, or are they still so far ahead that there is an expectation? As I say, bearing in mind we're going to France, who have improved over the last two or three years and, you know, continues to improve. We've got some quality players there as well. But is a Grand Slam the minimum? And when I say minimum, you know, the best would be a Grand Slam with us just walking games and bringing in lots of players and giving them lots more experience.
I think for the women's game, I think it would be a shame if England completely trounce everyone and walk away with it. I think the Grand Slam is on the cards. I think there's definitely some work for John Mitchell in terms of the next step for them. I'm going to make an assumption is they've clearly got another WXV tournament in between this Six Nations, the next one, and the big one for next year in next autumn with the World Cup, which is being hosted in England. So that's going to, I think, be the goal, but they need the stepping stones to do that. So it's a perfect opportunity, given the young players that they've had coming through the PWR this year. I think it's a really good opportunity for him to blood some of those players. They've got the likes of Sarah Hunter in the coaching team now as well, who's got plenty of experience playing at that level. So whilst you've got all of that experience in there, and we've talked about Marley, you talk about Zoe Allcroft, Abby Ward, all of those really experienced players that have played in numerous World Cups and Six Nations Championships. You know, Alex Matthews, Hannah Bottoman, Sarah Beckett, they're all really established players. I think there's also an opportunity for some of these games to bring some of these younger players through, those that are going to be there in 2025 for the World Cup. And, you know, Ella Viervash, Sophie Bridger, there's just so many that are in that young bracket that could do with some experience at that international level to get them prepped for next year. And I think that would be a really good opportunity for John Mitchell to do that.
Well, again, and there's another correlation with the men's team in England, isn't it? The fact that there is, it's an evolution, as I've said on many occasions, not a revolution. But it's important that you have that mixture of experience bringing through the youngsters, very much what's like happened at Saracens and perhaps at Gloucester as well, where there is a lot of experienced players at that club. But again, you've got youngsters coming through, and that's all good for it. For me, the jury's still out on John Mitchell as an appointment. Personally speaking, I'm not sure whether he's a coach of 10, 15 years ago in the men's game who's really good, and whether they're looking at women's rugby and saying that's where they're at, the standard they're at, which I think is unfair because I think the standard is actually a lot closer and is getting closer all the time. You know, it's just size and physicality that's really the huge difference between them. Skill levels, commitment, dedication, whatever, they're all there the same. We've got to give him this tournament. And as I say, you know, I mean, judge him on this tournament. I'm sure, you know, John Mitchell, being the age he is he only here to get us through the next World Cup? And then the likelihood of someone like a Sarah Hunter coming in into that coaching role, which I think would be a great step because, you know, as we said many times before, Joe, there is only one female coach at international level in this Six Nations, and that's not really good enough, is it?
No, and I think, you know, the stepping stones are starting to come through now. You see, you know, a lot of female coaches starting to come into those international setups now. As you mentioned there, Gail Mignot, you know, previous French international, is joint head coach for the French team for this champs, but the rest of them are all male coaches. And, you know, I'm not saying that females should get the job if they're not the best for the job, but, you know, the opportunities, I think, are starting to be there now more for female coaches. And, you know, the likes of Sarah Hunter and others, and some of those names that we've talked about, who are experienced, who are maybe looking at retiring in 4 years' time, will hopefully look into perhaps going into the coaching realms themselves. So the likes of Marley and Poppy and others, because I know that they already do a lot of coaching already for, you know, at grassroots rugby. So it's about promoting that game, and that's across the board, really, I think, not just the English players. You know, the PWR League has enticed a lot of Welsh, Scottish and Irish players to come and play in the league. And I think that has probably helped those teams bring their level up at an international game, because it is, without doubt, probably one, if not the best league in the world for playing women's rugby at club level.
Well, indeed. Well, look, we've discussed the wider tournament, and I think there is a time, though, where we can discuss the other teams in the Six Nations outside of England in relation to the games that they will have played this weekend. So we can have a look at our predictions abilities, if that's all right, Joe, and see where we go from there. Because, I mean, looking at this weekend, the first game on this weekend is France versus Ireland in France. And, you know, with the greatest respect to Ireland, they're a little bit behind the ball at the moment, aren't they? Grace, isn't it? From us, is in the squad. You know, she's a quality player who perhaps isn't getting the opportunities she's expecting at Saracens, because we've got such a profusion of great back row players and second row players at the club. But yeah, you know, Ireland's, what can they hope to achieve in this tournament? I mean, what would you think would constitute a good tournament for them?
Well, last year they were last season's wooden spooners. Unfortunately, they didn't come away with a win in last year's championship. So, but they did. They had a really good tournament in WXV3 and came out champions of the WXV. So, in that league. So, I think a step up for them would just be getting a win or some wins on the board for themselves. You mentioned Grace there. They've got some really quality players, as I've said, mentioned, who play in the PWR. Sam Monaghan for Gloucester Harper has been absolutely immense over the last 18 months. They've got a lot of their Irish Sevens players returning for the tournament this year. A lot of them didn't play last year, but I think some of that might be to do with the prep going towards the Olympics. I can't remember whether our Irish Sevens have qualified for the Olympics, but I'm making an assumption that they have. And, you know, Ireland later in the tournament got a really big game at Twickenham, where England host them, I think, back end of April for the big game, where hopefully we can draw a really, really big crowd, you know, similar to the 58,000 that were there for the England-France game last year. So I think for Ireland, a win and some good performances, I think, with Scott Beaman at the helm. They've got some really quality players, and I'd like to see them do all right this year.
Well, absolutely. And then looking at their opponents on Saturday, France, I mean, France away is a difficult game for anybody, even England, and we talked about that already. But that's not a great start for them, is it? I mean, but France, I mean, do you see them really challenging? I mean, last year at Twickenham, they came close, and then we just sort of pulled away. They, you know, it was 60, 65 minutes went it before England really got on top of the game. You know, are France taking another step? Are they equipped to really compete with England at this level?
Do you know what? They've had some really, really good wins in WXV. You know, they're world number three at the minute. The player of the tournament last year was French, Gabriel Vernier. And they've had a couple of retirees. So Jesse Tremoulier has retired at the end of the Twickenham game last year. But all of their players, with the exception of one, who I'm going to mention in a minute, because I think she's probably my young player of the tournament to watch for this year, they all play in the French League. So, you know, again, they're all playing together or opposite each other week in, week out. So I think that will help. That helps them. They've got so much experience again in the team with their scrum half, Borden Sanzouz. They've got the Ménager sisters. Caroline Dran, who's been playing on the seven circuit for France, is brilliant. She'll slot nicely into that 10 shirt instead of Trémoulier. And you've got a pair of sisters in the captain, Mano Falou, playing in the squad this year. And it's not going to be an easy trip for anyone, including England, to go to France, the last game of the competition. So I think it'll be really competitive. I think they're probably closer than they have been in a number of years. So I'm really looking forward to that game, I think.
Yeah, they're moving on to the second game on the weekend, Wales versus Scotland, which I think is probably the tie of the weekend. And it's very much whoever wins this game puts themselves in prime position for that third spot, maybe more depending. But you know, both teams will be targeting this match as the big match to win, won't they? And there's going to be plenty of Saracens involvement in that. Obviously, Donna and Georgia with Wales, and then the four girls for Scotland from us, isn't it? I mean, it's going to be a battle and a half, isn't it?
It's always a close game, Wales and Scotland, and, you know, it's always really, really competitive. Wales have edged, I think, the last two or three, but only by 3-4, maybe. I think the last season, I think they beat them by 10, 12 points, but they're always really, really close encounters. And, you know, the four Saris that you mentioned there, you've got Corin, you've got Lou McMillan, you've got Beth Blacklock and Fee McIntosh, uncapped, all who have been on the SSA Fescast, I have to say, in the last 12 months. So we'll give them a really big shout out. It's going to be really competitive. Couple of retirements, big retirements for Wales in Seanad Harris and Eleanor Snowshill. So they're going to be missing those, but still plenty of experience. Alex Callender, Alicia Butchers-Joyce, Jazz Joyce is taking a break from GB Sevens before she goes back for the squad for the Olympics, no doubt. And one of the big ones for me is Shona Wakeley, nay, Powell Hughes, who's making her first appearance back in a Welsh shirt for 4 years. Did really well in the Celtic Challenge, playing for Brighton Thunder, for anyone that watched that competition. So, yeah, I think, and again, from Scotland, they've got some of their GB7 speedsters who are returning as well to support the team who weren't necessarily available last year. Shona Campbell, Lisa Thompson, Rona Lloyd, to name just a few. Jade Conkle-Roberts is going to be missing for them this tournament. She recovers from injury, but they've got so much speed in their back line. Which is going to be really difficult for Wales to encounter. Fran McGee, who set the world alight in WXV with her speed, she's just been brilliant in the last 6 months. And Chloe Rolley, I mean, they're just so speedy, and they've got a brilliant hooker in Lana Skeldon, who is just like a try machine. So, again, it's going to be really, really competitive. I'm really looking forward to that game as well. It's going to be great.
But let's just put it out there now then. So we're saying France for a win. We're saying England for a win against Italy, obviously. Wales, Scotland, nail your colours to the mast. And then when we do the outro on this show, after this bit, we can say whether you got it right or wrong. And I'll go the opposite to you. Whichever way you go, I'll go the opposite.
I'm going to go Wales by 5.
Well, I'm going Scotland by 10, just for the hell of it.
Ooh.
God, I've liked the way that Scotland have really developed, and I think their pack might just be the difference. And I think if they get their pack right and get some supremacy there, and as I say, with the speed they have got available to them, they could just do it. But then again, I could completely and utterly be well off of there, and I will be laughing at myself wearing on the face. Let's have a quick look forward to what's coming up. As I say, this weekend's coming, because not this weekend coming, but you know what I mean. And the games we got coming on the Easter weekend and Saturday, I'm going to be down in Bristol, me and Shazza. Are you going to be in Bristol for England Wales? Well, excellent. Well, we'll meet you for a pint. I've got my park and ride tickets sorted at the Portway and everything. That's going to be good. I mean, Wales, it's one of those, isn't it? Wales will always get up for England. And I expect that to be a lot closer again this year than it has been in previous years, because it's been getting closer and closer and closer and closer. And I do think, although I've said I've gone Scotland because of just to be awkward in the week before, Wales is the one team I think that are showing the improvement. A lot to do with giving out professional contracts, and indeed a lot of Welsh players, particularly playing at Gloucester, because it's close by, Bristol, and, you know, R2 at Saracens as well. There's a lot of players who are getting greater exposure, not only to playing, but also to more professional training and the ability to train more often. So I think that gap's closing. And eventually, at some point, Wales may be the next team to step up there and take that on. Scotland have got France at home. And again, you know, like we said, Wales, Scotland, they target each other. Scotland have got to be targeting that as well. I mean, there's two pretty tough games. But if you're at home, you've got to target that game, haven't you, Joe?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, that's going to be, again, I think, closer than it's ever been before. Both those teams have got a load of speedsters that are just going to set the game alight. I think it could be a really, really open game, end-to-end. I'm really looking forward to that one as well. And, you know, I think Scotland are going to run them quite close in that game against France.
Yeah, absolutely. And then on Sunday, it's Ireland versus Italy. And we discussed it already about Ireland. What are their hopes and ambitions this year? That's the one game, isn't it? They need to get that win. And if they get that win at home against Italy, that then builds a bit more confidence going into the next games they've got coming up in the tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've talked about the Irish team there. Italy, seventh in the world at the minute. They've got some quality players. You only have to mention Beatrice Ragone's name. He's now playing over in the PWR, along with a couple of the other Italian players in the league. She just exudes cool, turns up at the games in her sunglasses, even though it might be cloudy and raining, and her flip-flops. Fantastic player, pulls the strings. Michele Soleri is there, kicking off the tee centre. Again, really, really good. Broke Welsh hearts with a last-minute penalty in 2022, and I was at that game in Cardiff's Arms Park in the 79th minute. I think there was about 3 seconds left to go. I think Ireland and Italy, that game will be a really tight game as well, and really competitive. Both of them are going to have strong packs going forward there as well, I think.
Well, Joe, plenty to look forward to, isn't it? And I'm sure, obviously, we will revisit the Women's Six Nations over the next 4 to 5 weeks, or however long it's on. It finishes at the end of April, doesn't it? So here we go, about 5-6 weeks of some really top quality rugby. And as I say, we've got tickets to the England-Wales game. Might even, you know, if we can, we'll look to go to a couple more, perhaps if we can, whatever. But, you know, it's well worth checking out on the TV as well. And enjoying that competition, because I think it's going to be absolutely fantastic this year, Joe.
It's going to be brilliant. You know, it's the women's game is rising all the time. And for the first time, bunker system will feature for the first time, along with shot clock. So we've got that to contend with. So that'll be interesting for the referees. Every player will have their name on the back of the jersey again for the first time, I think. So the professionalism of the game. And I think the final thing that they've got is the instrumental mouthguard. So it's starting to move up there, you know, alongside the men's game in terms of understanding that people want to come and watch women's rugby. They said that they wouldn't, but they do. And I recommend if our listeners haven't been and watched a women's rugby game, whether it's a club game or an international, they should get themselves there, because it's an absolutely fantastic day out. The rugby is just absolutely brilliant. And certainly the squads that we've discussed there, there's going to be absolutely some sterling games, some really competitive games this year in the Six Nations.
Well, Joe, I think I better let you go off and sit in a darkened corner and calm the excitement down. Obviously, you're like a kiddie on Christmas Eve, aren't you, waiting for this to happen?
I've got to go and try and plan my fantasy team now. That's not going to be the biggest headache going on. So, yes, also for our listeners, get yourselves on the fantasy team. They run it as very similar to the one that the men's run for the Guinness Six Nations. So, again, sponsored by Guinness, the Women's Six Nations. It's available on all good websites and really, really good fun as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you for that, Joe. And we'll hand back to whatever's going on in the other side of the podcast.
Hi, this is Petrus de Blasie, and you are listening to the Fezcast.
Well, yeah, as I said, at the top of the show, joining me for this part is Joe. After our review, preview, what do we call it last time? Well, we had a chat last week, did we, Joe, which we just played and talked about it. And, yeah, I got the big prediction right, didn't I? Ish.
Well, not one of the predictions right, you know. We weren't too far off. It was a close game.
Well, yeah, and I think that's what we said, wasn't it? That Wales, Scotland was going to be the real tough match to call, the game of the round, and so it turned out to be. I mean, as I understand, a full-blooded, fully competitive. You know, the result could have gone either way, right up to the very end. But well done to Scotland for coming down to Wales and getting that very important win for them. That really does set them up for this tournament, doesn't it?
Oh, I mean, it does. I mean, I think they said were saying it's their first win in Wales in the Six Nations for the women in 20 odd years. So, you know, it's a real long time. I think the last time they had a win was when it was Five Nations before Italy joined. So, you know, that's a long time for them to wait for that win, and there has been some close games in the past, and you know this game was no different. And you know it came down to it. I thought it was going to be a draw, and the conversion in the last couple of minutes just slid wide of the post. And you know it is what it is. I think both teams played really well. Both showed some really good go forward. And yeah. Honestly, either team, I think, could have won that game. And I have to say, and I will give her a massive shout-out, because, again, she's been a guest on the first cast as well. Corinne Grant was absolutely outstanding. And the commentators, the Welsh commentators, Sue and Lily Crapp included, were absolutely raving about Corrie. Now, we've already always known about her skill in the Scottish Flyer, but she really, really did show how much she's come on in the last 18 months
well,
this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was really good to see, isn't it? Now, Scotland have got France up next at home. France, who, you know, Ireland made them work hard, but they looked fully on it, you know, and credit to Ireland who've shown improvement again, but, you know, France weren't really troubled, were they, particularly?
No, they weren't. And, you know, I don't think the scoreline necessarily reflected how well Ireland did in defence, if I'm being brutally honest, having watched the game. I think they did really, really well. You know, France's handling errors were, you know, every 2 minutes they're handling, juggling the ball all over the place. And yes, some could argue that it was a bit damp over there in France, and handling the ball was not the easiest thing, but you know, I don't think they would want to say that was an excuse. Some of their handling, I think, was poor. I think Ireland did some really good work in terms of their defence and keeping the scoreline to what it did. And, you know, they had some pretty good go forward when they had the opportunities as well. So, you know, I think they will be happy and see that as a win from their point of view, and got what they wanted out of the game in terms of showing that they have the capability to battle for a full 80 minutes, because they never stopped trying.
Well, indeed. Now, Wales, obviously, disappointed after that game, but as you say, they played well enough to suggest that, you know, they're going to cause problems as well. And they've got England up next. Now, quite frankly, England's really disappointed me against Italy. Really disappointed me for a number of reasons, really. I mean, Yeah, Emily Scarrett, great player, absolute legend of the game. But she's played, what, 20 minutes of rugby, it seems, before being chucked straight back into the international game. And she just wasn't at the races, was she?
No, and I think, you know, that's a coaching decision. You can't really necessarily blame the player. She's been out with injury for a good 12 months, serious injury, surgery on her neck. And she is a fantastic player when she's on her game. But she has been out. And like any player who's been out for that length of time, it's going to take a little bit of time for them to get back in. She's played a couple of games for a club, Loughborough Lightning. But we know that is a completely different ball game than playing at international level, not least for the players that are around you all the time. And that's not disrespectful to Loughborough Lightning. But, you know, when you're playing for England, you're playing with people that are all at the top of their game. And I think she was perhaps just a couple of steps behind some of those other players. And maybe she'll get there in this tournament with a little bit of match play. And perhaps the only way is to get her into some matches to do it. I'm not just sure that starting her in that first game was the best decision from the coaching team. But, you know, they're international coaches and I'm not and you're not. But, I think...
I just think it sends out the wrong message, Joe, that there's girls who've been playing all season and, you know, we've got a couple at our club and you see centres at other clubs as well who've really been performing well this season, and suddenly Emily Scarrett on reputation comes straight back in ahead of them. You know, that's a kick in the teeth to players who've worked really hard and deserve, you know, and as I say, no disrespect to Emily, but they deserve that place ahead of her.
I think picking on form is always a better way to go, and it shows the value of people that are performing week in and week out. You know, reputations can only go so far, and that's why people like us pick up on when people aren't performing at their best, because their reputation does precede them. But when you're seeing people play at club level week in, week out at a high level, and you mention people there, I don't mind name dropping her. I think Sydney Gregson was unlucky to miss out in this squad because she has been brilliant. And I'm not saying that just because she's a Saris player. I think there were several other people that I think have missed out that don't play for Saris that perhaps should have been considered in that lineup as well against Italy. And we talked about it in our review show. I think it's a really good opportunity to blood some of those younger players and some of those players that have actually been on form in the PWR this season.
Yeah, indeed. Now, the other issue with England, again, it's reared its ugly head, is discipline. Sarah Beckett, 10 minutes into the game and the crocodile roll, slight mitigation which might come in when it comes to the disciplinary is that I think she realised what she was doing and tried to stop. But by then, the damage had been done. And it was very lucky that the girl wasn't hurt even more than what she was and was able to continue and play. But it did look nasty. And, yeah, it was a moment of, well, I won't say madness because I don't think that's fine, but fair. But it was a moment where, you know, I think Katie McLean in commentary said about the top 2 inches and develop that top 2 inches, you know, that what Clive Wood would always used to call the most important part of a rugby player. And it was just a little bit brainless, really, almost in that situation. You know, you train all day, every day, you're professional players. You know, me as a player, I might have done it because I, you know, was training once a week or whatever. But if you're doing it in, day out, you know in those situations what you can and cannot do and should be able to be better than that, I think.
Yeah, I think they've made no bones about it, particularly for this tournament. They've mentioned it in the PWR as well. You know, the officials are hot on neck rolls. They're hot on crocodile rolls. They're high on those high tackles and the headshots for the concussion protocols. You know, and players are aware of that because their team managers must be telling them that week in, week out. And so must their international coaches be telling them, you know, here's what the officials are going to be looking out for. I mean, we can analyse the slow-mo all day and it looked awful in slow-mo, and the position that Michaela Sillery for the tackle, she was in a really brilliant position for the tackle. Sarah Beckett's come over the top to try and, you know, get rid of her out of that of that position. And I think you're right. You know, I think she realised where she was going, but by that point, her forward momentum had already taken her so far past the point. And I think the only, probably one of the main reasons that the Italian player was not seriously injured was because Sarah Beckett realised it and managed to sort of roll her body weight in away from the player rather than fully over the top of her. Because I think that probably would have ended Sillery's Six Nations championship for this year. You know, it was a silly tackle, and you know, I think she realised it, and I think probably even Marley Packer, when the referee had that conversation with her, she realised that it was probably heading that way as soon as she called for a bunker review. And you know, we mentioned it in the preview, bunker system coming for the Six Nations. Whether she'd have given a straight red if the bunker had not been in it, I don't know. You know, only Marilee Grosselot will know that. But you know, the tackle was not good from a professional, and I suspect that there was no malice intended from Sarah Beckett. From what I've seen of her play for Quins and Gloucester, she's not a malicious player. And I think there was, you know, evidenced in the commentary as well. But I think, and hopefully she'll learn from that. And obviously they had a yellow card towards the end of the game as well, with Helena Rowland going in over the top and, you know, the shoulder making contact with the head, again, trying to clear out from a ruck. And, you know, players are going to have to watch this, not just the English players, all the players are going to have to watch this now, because the referees, the officials are really starting to pick up on this. The TMOs are going to be at every games as well, something that they're perhaps not used to for in the PWR week in and week out. So, you know, professional players, semi-professional players, those that are playing in this tournament are going to have to understand that, you know, tackling, clear outs, they're all high on the agenda of the officiating teams and the TMOs, and they will pick them up. And you know, I think the men's game has found that. I remember, you know, we talked about this probably 12-18 months ago in the men's game, with the big spike in TMO reviews and going back, and the yellow cards and the red cards. The women's game is a little bit further behind that, but they're going to have to go through that same pain now until the message hits home about ensuring that they're protecting themselves and each other whilst they're playing the game. So,
indeed, yeah. I mean, but what we do have to say is, for all of that, and they say England playing most of the game with 14 players and a big chunk with 13 players, they found solutions, so it's not all bad. And when it clicks, I mean, Eddie Kildon got player of the match. I mean, she scored a hat-trick, and I mean, her first try, where she just carved through like a hot knife through butter, was it her second try? Whichever, there was one of the tries, which was just outstanding. Felt a bit sorry for Jess Breach and Abby Dow, because every time they got the ball, they were obviously targeted as danger players and were marked out of it. And, you know, not wishing to harp on about Emily Scarrett, but when she was replaced, we suddenly went through the middle a lot quicker, because the Italian defence was going wide and we spotted there was gaps in the middle, and we went through it and scored tries that way. Sadia Kabai, she was awesome on the flank. I thought she had a really, really fine game. And Abby Ward as well, second row, you know, 10 minutes after giving birth. I mean, Jesus, that's some comeback, you know, when you talk about injuries and everything, to do that. So there were plenty of good performances there. I think Mohan coming on as well made a bit of a difference for the speed at the ruck as well, which, you know, one of those things. I think Packer had a pretty solid game, with considering that she had a pack that was down to 7 players for most of the game. You know, so there's plenty there to look and say, yeah, okay, it wasn't quite as bad. I was just a little bit disappointed. And, you know, you hope to see England notoriously slow at starting tournaments, men and women often. So you hope to see improvement. And, yeah, the interesting thing is next week we got Wales on Saturday and we're both going to be down in Bristol. The Welsh frequently in previous games have really targeted the English and got niggly, haven't they? And live on the edge. But, you know, it's that game they get up for everywhere. You know, with the TMOs, with this Hyder, it wouldn't surprise me to see some disciplinary problems next week, Joe.
It's definitely going to be a fiery counter. I think from John Mitchell's point of view, he'll be happy that they managed to keep Italians off the scoreboard. So in defence, they were rock solid. Because the Italians are no slouch in wanting to score. They chose not to take points when they were perhaps available to them from the tee. But, you know, from a positive point of view, perhaps the one player less gave them more space to explore that. I mean, again, you know, the scoreline probably didn't justify. Zoe was not at the top of her game off the kicking tee for one reason or another. So she was probably a little bit disappointed and a little bit frustrated with her kicking performance off the tee. But that's because she's world class at it normally. So I expect Zoe to bounce back in that respect. But you know, when you've got the likes of Helena Rowland and others that can play in that first receiver position, you've mentioned a few of them there. Saria Cabaya, I agree with you. Abby Ward was absolutely superb, and I think she was probably a contender for player of the match as well. And I have to say, somebody else who I was really impressed with, who never fails to impress me, to be perfectly honest, was Hannah Potterman. Box was just brilliant in the front row there with her go forward. And the moment that England went down to 14 players, it seemed to ignite her, and she almost took on, right, well, I'm going to play for two people then, because her drive forward was just absolutely superb. And Hannah, probably by her own admission, has sometimes been guilty of a few infractions herself. I thought she played a blinder, and she did it in a way that kept herself out of trouble, and she was just really up for it, I think. So I mean, fair play to her from that point of view. Some of the substitutions that came on, Mac got a nice little try for herself as well, and I thought Kelsey Clifford in her first England start was brilliant as well. She had some fabulous turnovers at the breakdown as well. But yeah, for this weekend coming, I think yes, with of Alex Callender from the Welsh side, who we know that can be a little bit fiery. Amongst others, Georgia as well will be no doubt up for the game. I thought she was brilliant against Scotland when she came on, and I would expect her to start this weekend, given her performance coming on at just after half time. So yes, there will certainly be some interesting competition across the park, I think is the best way to describe that. They'll play against each other week in, week out at club level, the English and the Welsh. So, yes, I think it will be the team that keeps their head and doesn't end up with people walking from the pitch that will come out on top at the weekend. And I think that will be drummed in by both the head coaches this week.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, so plenty to look forward to there, Joe, and thank you again for your time tonight, and thank you for your preview. And we'll reconvene next week and have a chat, or maybe we might get a chance on Saturday after the game to have a quick chat about it and see what we could do. But yeah, thank you, Joe, for your time, and we'll have a quick short break, and then we'll be back to discuss the Showdown 4 and a mighty win for the Saracens.
You're listening to the Fezcast.
You're listening to the Fezcast, which is proudly sponsored by the Saracen Supporters Association, and I'm Alison Davis, one of the SSA committee. For a £10 annual subscription, the SSA provides our members with monthly newsletters, virtual and in-person player events, away match ticket allocations, and we organise pre-match gatherings at away matches. We sponsor men's and women's players, and we support the Saracens Foundation Track Club on behalf of our members. On top of all that, every year we have a seasonal SSA badge, which is exclusive to members. Where else can you get that much value for a tenner? Join now at membermojo.co.uk/SSA or come and see us on match day in the Oasis at the Stonex.
This is the Fezcast.
Nice one, Sarries. Nice one, son. Nice one, Sarries. We've got to want another one. Hello, Duncan. How you doing? What a great weekend that was, eh?
Brilliant, wasn't it?
Yeah,
really good. Hands up, everybody who predicted we put 50 points on Quinns.
Absolutely not. I mean, but there was a bit of a throwback to the 60s when Spurs had a team that used to win stuff with nice one seal there. But yeah, nice one, Sarries. A nice one. Well, Faz in particular. What a great. I mean, I've never been to the Spud Stadium, and I'll be honest with you, it does stick in my craw a little bit to say how wonderful it was, being that it's in enemy country, as I mentioned last week. But it is a fantastic stadium, and the experience the whole day was absolutely fantastic. Bit of a long walk to get there from the shuttle bus, and an even longer walk to get back to Seven Sisters Station to get the tube back across London. But
get into Seven Sisters Station? I tried to get home that way and gave up, ended up on a bus to Mornington Crescent or something. So it was a bit of a round trip getting home.
Well, me and Shaz left a little bit early. I mean, I think we'd seen enough, you know. It was like, I mean, if it'd been a boxing match, it would have been called off after round three, wouldn't it? Somebody would have thrown a towel in. And actually, when they showed on the TV the coach's box for the Quinns, and he looked at it and he thought they have thrown a towel in, because they just looked absolutely clueless, didn't they?
Do you know, there was once or twice they were threatening our line. That was it, wasn't it? The rest of the game seemed to be taking place in their half. It was, and it wasn't just the amazing attacking play. It was the defence. Defence was fantastic.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? Now, on the train back, myself and Shaz were there. We got chatting to a couple of Quinns lads and just, you know, not crowing or nothing like that. Because I actually felt slightly embarrassed for Quinns fans. You spent a lot of money to go over there. And I couldn't work out whether it was that Saracens were so good or whether Quinns were bad. And I think there's an element of both. And I don't really wish to diss down another team. But I've got to say, I thought Quinns, their senior players were unprofessional. And I mean, I'll go through the list. Danny Kerr typified it at the end of the first half, where they'd had a bit of a go, they'd had a penalty, then they got a line out, and Danny Kerr decided to kick the ball out. And he looked at his body language, and quite frankly, it was abysmal. I mean, he just looked as if he was, I think he turned around and probably said to Alex Donbrand, he said, "Is the coach running? Can we just go and bugger off home now?" And, you know, and then Andre Esterhuizen, I think he's playing for whoever he's playing for next season. He wasn't interested at all. Joe Marler's been playing Six Nations rugby for the last 6 weeks. So why does he look so fat and slow and just walking around the pitch? I mean, Joe Launchby was putting effort in, but he looks like he's been on the beach for 6 weeks. He put on a stone and a half in weight, and although he was given the effort, he just wasn't there. And, you know, that then permeated down into those younger players, and I'll include Marcus Smith as one of those younger players. Marcus was trying things. He was just getting flattened every time he tried to do something. As you say, the defence is superb. But, you know, Caden Murley, Tyrone Green, they're great players. Oscar Beard, they've had a really good season. But
there was
just
a lot of talk, wasn't there, about how rusty everybody would be, and we certainly weren't. We were right on it, which reminded me, you know, we're often really great at the beginning of a season after a good pre-season. We often come in flying, and it felt like that. Whereas mentally, as you say, for Quinns, the best body language I saw on the screen at half time when I was queuing up for a drink. I don't know whether it's TNT or ITV it was on, but that hairy Welshman they've got as one of their coaches,
yeah,
the look on his face as the Quinns players were coming in was sort of like, what the effing hell have you lot been doing out there? It was just a picture. But I mean, his face.
I mean, the other player, two players I'm going to call out here, Alex Donbrand, who just, I mean, reminded me very much. I remember years ago on a rugby tour to Poland, we played the Polish police force, who were all 6'4" and 18 stone, prop to fullback. And they were riot police. We played them in halftime. We'd been out at the lash the night before and we were drinking vodka Red Bull. It was £10 for a bottle of vodka and 10 Red Bulls. And, you know, we were no fit state to play rugby in 100 degrees heat. At halftime, our captain turned around and said, whatever we do, lads, we've lost the game. Just win the fight. So 10 minutes into the second half, I started a fight. Now, I then probably lost as well because I was fighting the Polish police force. And Alex Donbrand was that. He was... He within about 10 minutes, he was just looking for someone to snout because he knew he couldn't compete. He suddenly had a couple, about 5 minutes where he did good stuff and got his try and he had one run and everything, but then he was looking to snout people. And the one player that really typified it more than anything else was Stephen Lewis, their captain. And it, for two things happened with him. One, Christoph Ridley, who had an extremely good game, excellent refereeing, thoroughly brilliant refereeing. He told the referees, he'd given Joe Marler the ticking off for doing the countdown and all that sort of thing. The Saracens had penalty after penalty after penalty, line out after line out after line out. And Christoph Ridley turned around to the captain and said, excuse me, next player is in the bin. Go and speak to your lads. And Stephen Lewis went off and spoke to the team and then they had a line out and he committed a penalty offence in the line out and got yellow carded for it. And I mean, in the words of Brian Moore, that's dim. And then second half, he should have seen red for the clear out. Well, I say clear out, the cheap shot he put in on Faz that rightly riled Faz right up. And quite rightly, it did as well, because he just saw him on the floor and thought, I'll give him a bit of this. And Austin Healy had spotted it. And the TMO went, oh, no, Austin Healy spotted that. Best not do it. I think we'd best make Austin Healy a TMO because he does spot an awful lot of these stuff. But...
Oh, he really does. And there's an inquiry into what the TMO did there, because he's not meant to listen to commentary. But at least, you know, those fights showed that Quinns had some fight in them and that they were annoyed about their own performance. So they weren't doing it deliberately. And there is this question of why, you know, it's almost like, can we play Quinns every week? Because every time we play them, we stuff them at the moment. I mean, one of these days we won't, but at the moment we've got the hoodoo on them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's... You know, and I mean, I think, let's be fair to Quinns. I said this as well, I don't think there's any team in the world who could have coped with the Saracens' performance. And I'll give you, I'll bring out an example. I brought up the WhatsApp group. When I re-watched the game on telly, it was 19 minutes, 53 seconds before Saracens made a mistake. And the mistake was Hugh Tizard, when we're already three or four tries up, trying a speculative offload that didn't come off. And to give you the exact difference in mentality between Quinns and Saracens, if Quinns had done that, they'd have shrugged their shoulders and whatever. Owen Farrell, despite us cruising, has gone to Hugh Tizard and told him, well, that was effing stupid. And you could see Hugh was visibly like, yeah, I've really copped up here. I'm sorry, boss. I'm really sorry, Skip. Didn't mean to. I was just trying something. And that's the difference, isn't it? That Saracens demanded excellence and gave excellence. Quinns couldn't cope with that excellence.
Well, after the game, you know, Faz was being interviewed and he was going on about the 7 points we gave away, which is, you know, typical of it. Oh, by the way, you know, before I forget, I knew I couldn't trust your judgment. So I really know now if you're going to go out and pick a fight with the Polish police force. You really, really are as dense as I thought you were.
Well, absolutely, yeah. I learned my lesson. Yeah, the lessons of youth there, Duncan. But, yeah, no, look, I mean, the interesting thing is when we talk about excellence, as I said, Shaz and I were talking to the guys on the train back with the back, and I said to them, I said, look, who impressed you? And they listed off names that we're going to go through. And I said, who did you think didn't have such a great game then? You know, it was a, and they turned around and said, well, I just thought Billy Vunipola was a little bit off the pace. And at the time I went, yeah, I sort of see that. And then I watched the game afterwards, and Billy probably wasn't our best player, but he was still an 8 out of 10. Easily an 8 out of 10.
Definitely. You know, I mean, there were some turnovers he made and tackles and what have you, and a carrying, you know, were very, very good. It's going to be so interesting, isn't it? The next few games, you know, Northampton away and then Bordeaux. God, I can't wait for that one to see what the result is going to be. And I guess the key is going to be around, you know, who is going to need resting, of which you guess the candidates are definitely Nick Tompkins, Ben Earl. Marrow's already had a rest, so maybe not him. Jamie George, maybe. But we've got cover. I mean, Marrow, we did all of that. Marrow wasn't even playing.
Yeah, and Jamie George didn't come on until deep into the second, or not deep in the second half. But
we've got cover at eight between, you know, Tom Willis cover. Tom Willis and Billy Vunipola. I just hope to goodness we don't put Elliot Daly at centre when we give Nick Tompkins a rest, because, you know, oh boy, I hate to say I told you so, brackets, no, I don't, brackets, but you put Elliot Daly at the back, give him all that extra time, that extra space, give him the ability to decide where he joins the back line, and that on Saturday is what you get. And you don't just get that genius from him. He makes other players look better. I mean, Max Malins was a great, great player, but that combination of Elliot Daly at full back and Faz at centre made Max Malins look even better than he was. And he'd do that with players. Sean Maitland had a great, great game.
Yeah,
it makes Elliot Daly made him look even better.
It makes me wonder whether Sean's got playing for another year's extension on little money. But yeah, I mean, all across the park was great performances, and I've written down some. You've mentioned Elliot Daly, quite rightly, man of the match. I mean, he had his magic boots on, everything he touched, even the stuff that didn't go quite right still came off. And I think there was one kick in particular which came off. Theo Dan. He set the tone. That run right at the very start, where he just went through the parting of the Red Sea almost, wasn't it? And he just set the tone for the rest of the game. And I think it frightened the living bejesus out of Quins, and they just didn't cope with it. Hugh Tizard, I mean, he had the offload didn't go right, you know, but he was still doing that engine room job with Theo McFarlane, doing all these special stuff off the back of it as well. Theo had a great game. Our Argentinians, Juan Martin Gonzalez, Kaczynski, brilliant. Absolutely. I mean, frighteningly good. And I think, you know, the plaudits that everybody has given Saracens is completely right. I just hope, you know, as you say, this Friday is going to be an interesting one, because Saints are coming off of a thumping by Bristol. And we've given Quins a thumping. You hope that we're still full throttle. And I think, you know, you, as you say, next two games, Saints and Bordeaux, you're going into those games thinking, yeah, OK, let's just go full throttle. And then perhaps Gloucester is a game where maybe you give a couple of players a bit of a rest. But, yeah, you mentioned Nick Tompkins. Great. Nick Tompkins, the week before, I had a game where I gave him 2 out of 10 for Wales, where, he, you know, as I described it, he couldn't have caught a fish in an aquarium. You know, this time, it just shows you the difference, isn't it? When you come into a team that's well coached, with players that you respect, with players that you trust, it makes you play better. You go into a team which is badly coached, with players that you don't respect and trust, you fall down to their level. And Nick was a prime example of that.
He didn't look like the Duracell bunny with a couple of cheap Chinese batteries in him, did he? Which he did when he was playing for Wales. He's had a tough long season. He was really good. The next two games, we're really going to know where we stand. But yeah, Bordeaux beat Toulouse at the weekend, so they haven't gone off the boil. It's going to be really interesting.
I think the Bordeaux game's an interesting one, because I think with all the will in the world, we're not going to Bordeaux expecting Saracens to be still in the European competition. And that may not be such a bad thing in relation to the Premier League, as it were, because I think, you know, you want to stay in competitions as long as you possibly can, and you want to win everything you go in. There's no point doing it. But going in as slight underdogs may do, because, I mean, we'll remember us playing Clermont that time when we'd had a thumping before and then we went out and absolutely destroyed them. This team, if they stay at this level, will frighten any team in Europe. To lose.
Well, the thing is that they've got so much pride. I think they'll be going there seeking revenge.
Absolutely.
Because that was such a humiliating night.
And I don't think, even if we don't get a win in Bordeaux, but we get a performance where we make them work really, really hard and have to be the best that Bordeaux are. And let's be honest about it, Bordeaux are a fabulous side. You know, no two ways about it. And then if they beat us, I fully expect them to go on and win the whole tournament, potentially. But, you know, as I say, we want them to work hard at the very least. And you never know then. I mean, as I say, there's no team in the world that could have coped with Saracens.
We looked like we had the speed of attack that Bordeaux had that night. And the other thing was, which looking at the bench before last Saturday's game, it looked frightening again. It almost felt like the days when you'd have Will Skelton coming on.
Yeah.
You know, it felt like that, didn't it, with the people on the bench?
Well, you got Jamie George on the bench. You got Andy Christie. Andy Christie. Andy yeah. Christie got into my Six Nations team of the tournament, you know, and not through just Saracen's bias, because he genuinely was that bloody good.
You had an Italian and a Fijian international on the bench.
Yeah, and wasn't it wonderful to see Marco back as well? Yeah. I mean, we have missed him. I think also Christian Judge played really, really well. And did well, as did Maku. And front row's been a bit of an issue. Those four guys now, if they're fit, and that's the bones of it, with Theo and Jamie between them, I don't think we've got anything to worry about for the rest of the season in front row.
Nick Azikwe on the bench.
Yeah, phenomenal, isn't it?
And we've still got Callum Hunter-Hill in reserve. You know, apart from centre, you know, we're looking really strong. Shame about Saturday, and it was a double-edged sword because Sean Maitland had such a good game, was Roti being injured. And you're thinking, you've just had an 8-week rest and you're injured again. I just really keep my fingers crossed for him because he's such an exciting player, and I just want to see him not be injured.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. And I mean, it is a worry when you get a player that, you know, it's a tight calf. You know, some players will get affected by tight calves. Other players will do their utmost to not be affected by it. And I'm not questioning Roddy's commitment or anything like that. It's just that sometimes some players have that issue, some don't. And, you know, I'd hope that he can work through that and find a way through it.
He's such an exciting player. It's just great to see him on the pitch.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, Alex Lewington, brilliant as well. I mean, yeah, we could be sat here forever praising every single one of that 23 players who played, plus the coaching staff. And, I mean, I think there was the example, and I mentioned the Quinn's coaching team, when they looked absolutely clueless in their box. I think there was halfway through the second half, they showed Joe Shaw and Mark McCall talking, and they were having a proper debate, and it was absolutely obvious that there was some, and that's the thing, isn't it? It's, you know, never resting on the laurels and always striving to be better. And, you know, most people will sit there and say, how can Saracens be better than what they were on Saturday? And I tell you, Mark McCall and Joe Shaw and the rest of the coaching team would have been sat down Sunday morning over a latte somewhere in Watford or wherever, or Hemel or whatever, and would be discussing that and saying, this is where we can get better. This is what we could do. We should have scored 65 points. We should never have given away that 7 points. What a great, you know, and it, this, the other thing about it as well is it's not all old seasoned heads who are doing this. This is young players. And you look at the players that are there. Theo Dan's, 22, 23. Juan Martin Gonzalez is 22, 23. You know, even Nick Tompkins is still only late 20s. These are young players that have bought into this, you know, into this single-minded determination to be the very best. And it's just wonderful to see.
We are in a transition and it's being managed so well. And if you believe the rumours that are going on, we've got a couple of young number 10s coming in potentially. So that whole transition, you know, is almost seamless.
Yeah.
When you consider that this season is the end of an era with Owen Farrell going, and yet on it goes.
Absolutely. Well, look, I mean, we could go on forever, couldn't we, Duncan? But, yeah. I mean, I think we all saw it. We're all still sat there with cheesy grins and toasting champagne rugby that we saw. And yeah, I think the key thing is to say is that often you'll see the comments on social media in particular, and you don't like to give them too much credence, as it were, but the comments have been fulsome in their praise. Normally, they, you know, it's like salary sends or whatever. This time around, it's been, they were just good, excellent, brilliant. And that comes from Gloucester fans, from Bar fans, from Quinns fans, and not just our own fans. People who understand rugby looked at that and went, wow, that was amazing.
It was just everything about it, a great entertainment, including the whole day, and just fantastic execution in every single way.
Absolutely. Before we go, I need to quickly say hi to Anthony and Mark Sindel. Good to see them on the shuttle bus on the way down there. And also Tony, who was on there, who recognised me by my voice, which does go to prove that people do listen to us, Duncan.
Yeah, well, they probably heard that that you got in a scrap with the Polish police and thought we're going to avoid him.
Yeah, I don't blame you, honestly. That was honestly one of the hardest things that has ever happened. I actually got sent off in that game for my own safety, which was one of two times that's happened to me. The other time was down in Lydney, but there we go. That's a different story for a different time. But Duncan, thank you very much for your time again. And as I say, we'll be back after the Easter break, hopefully continue to talk about fine Saracens performances with the with a game against Saints on Friday night, and looking forward to Bordeaux Beglers as well.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, everybody, and we'll see you next time on the Fezcast.
This is the Fezcast.